yesterday's attacks on another.
Some say that he does have ties to Muslim extremists. I don't know.
I want to hear an American poem. Something American. A South Carolina slave shouter, Alabama backwoods church shack calling him spots. I want to hear an American poem. An American poem about sharecroppers on the side of the road, or families in cardboard boxes. Not about kings or majestic lands or how beautiful ugly can be. I want to hear some American poetry about projects and lead poison, poverty and children in jail.
The World Bank has predicted that China will take the U.S. place as the world's largest economy this year. The comparison has been made on the basis of the triple P, the purchasing power parity. The triple P measure is a better comparison for many purposes, including military spending. A brief review of Cold War history makes it clear that when the United States had an arms race against the Soviet Union, the Soviet economy was maybe one quarter of the size of its enemy. The U.S. has never experienced an arms race with a country whose economic size advantage is growing rapidly. Are Americans prepared to give up Social Security or Medicare in order to maintain U.S. military supremacy in the world? A newly released poll asked Americans whether they thought the United States should intervene in conflicts of sovereign states across the world. Only 34% of the voters said they wanted a more involved foreign policy, while more than 6 in 10 Americans wanted to be more non-interventionist. Now, it seems that Americans are more opposed to military action than they were a decade ago, given the experiences they had in Afghanistan and Iraq. According to the useconomy.about.com, the U.S. military budget is $763.9 billion for the fiscal year 2016. That makes military spending the second largest federal government expenditure, after Social Security, with $938 billion. Military spending is greater than Medicare at $583 billion and Medicaid at $351 billion, or the interest payment on the debt at $283 billion. To understand how the U.S. military budget has been set during various eras, some facts need to be considered. Before World War II, the U.S. government used to spend about 1% of its GDP for military purposes. In World War II, in 1945, the U.S. military spending was over 41% of its GDP. But the trend changed after the war, when the country found itself in a global rivalry with communism. Since then, the military budget has never been less than 3.6% of the GDP.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Ronald Reagan.
During the Reagan administration, the U.S. military budget made up 6.8% of the GDP. However, before the collapse of the Soviet Union, it started to decline as it came under 6% in 1990, around 4% in 1996, and touched its lowest level at 3.5% of the GDP in 2001. 9/11 changed the trend once again. Military spending saw a considerable increase in two phases. First, it jumped to 4.6% by 2005 following the invasion of Iraq, and then to 5% in 2008 for the surge in that country. The military budget increased further to 5.7% in 2011, when Washington decided it wanted to be more active in Afghanistan. And it was expected to decline to 4.5% of the GDP in 2015, and 3.8% by 2020.
We spend more on our military than the next 10 countries combined. China, Russia, France, the United Kingdom, you name it. Next 10. And what I did was work with our Joint Chiefs of Staff to think about what are we going to need in the future to make sure that we are safe. And that's the budget that we've put forward. But what you can't do is spend $2 trillion in additional military spending that the military is not asking for, $5 trillion on tax cuts. You say that you're going to pay for it by closing loopholes and deductions without naming what those loopholes and deductions are. And then somehow you're also going to deal with the deficit that we've already got. The math simply doesn't work.
Hey you, where are all the American poems about Harlem number runners and barbershop conversations about colored faces on colored TVs? I want to hear an American poem, something American as jazz, or a South Bronx burner, Brandon Storm, an abandoned building, a scratch tune, a breakbeat, a backspin, a beatbox,
In a bid to get over its financial problems, the Obama administration adopted a belt-tightening policy in all aspects, including military spending.
Today, there are about 520,000 active duty soldiers, which the Army had planned to reduce to 490,000. However, the Strategic Choices and Management Review and the QDR both determined this will be the first budget to fully reflect the transition DOD is making for after 13 years of war.
The Pentagon plans to reduce the size of the Army to between 440,000 and 450,000 soldiers. The Army is currently about 520,000 soldiers and had been planning to draw down to about 490,000 in the coming year, he added. A reduction to 450,000 would be the Army's smallest size since 1940, before the United States entered World War II, when it counted a troop strength of 267,767, according to the U.S. Army figures.
The strategy really...
Kathleen Hicks, a former senior defense official, says Congress always modifies the president's budget request, and they will repeat it for Obama's. The question is, will they do it in small ways or large ways?
This is the worst possible time to be reducing our defense spending, and yet that is what we are doing, and we are setting ourselves up for danger. I would recognize that people who have worked hard on this budget have tried to find new ways to address this through contingency funding. I respect the work they've done.
That was the last time the Department of Defense engaged in what we should do in this body, which is to budgeting for the military based on the threats that we face and the strategy we need, not having a strategy that is driven by the budget. But that's not enough.
The absence of a long-range bomber, the need to replace an aging submarine fleet, a Navy that's headed for a catastrophic low number of ships. All of these things need to be confronted, not to mention the fact that we are not modernizing at an efficient and effective rate our nuclear arsenal, which is a key part of our deterrent in a world where China and Russia and others have significant stockpiles of weapons, particularly the Russians. All of these things are important, and these are long-range, long-term decisions that will have an impact on a future Congress, on a future Commander-in-Chief, and on our children and grandchildren, who will be the ones that will have to live in that world.
What I saw was a Washington that, you know, just was unable, for a lot of reasons, to deal with the major issues facing this country. I've seen Washington at its best, and I've seen it at its worst. I mean, I've never seen Washington as partisan, as divided, as dysfunctional as it is today. And obviously, we're paying a price for that. We're paying a price on the budget, the failure to deal with the budget, failure to deal with tax reform, failure to deal with entitlements, failure to deal with immigration reform, failure to deal with infrastructure funding, the failure to deal with the whole issue of energy and climate change, the failure to deal with, they can't even agree on war authority at a time when we're at war, dealing with ISIS. I mean, all of these things, for whatever reason, the president, the Congress, Democrats, Republicans, can't come together.
However, the U.S. politicians' disagreement on the military spending is just tactical. But they do agree on their security strategy, a preemptive war. The dark shadow of terrorism and massacre of civilians will slide across the world, including the United States itself, as long as this strategy is followed.